general information, and then there's a number of things underneath the general information that we will cover, including road safety strategy, as to what the strategy is of the agency. And then, of course, like we all have to do, is our business plan for 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, and what the NCF allocations, etc., are. And then, of course, we've got the detail of discussions around the actual annual report itself, which you've got tabled in front of you, and we will take you through that. Now, to start off with the network, the size of the network, as you can see how it has grown from the time that we were in 1998, when the agency was established, we had just under 6,700 kilometers of road. Currently, as I speak to you, the network comprises of just over 16,000 kilometers of road, and this will grow to about 20,000 kilometers of road. This slide here gives you a breakdown in terms of what comprises the road in terms of dual carriageway, four-lane undivided, single carriageway, what the total is. And I think it's important to note that 83% of the network is non-toll. I know that tolls are fairly controversial and causes a lot of emotion here, but you need to take note that it's 83% of the network is non-toll. And it is my opinion that that's sort of the figure you could say. And it may change by 1 or 2%, but I can't see ever getting less than 80%. It's the nature of the things that we've got. Even with our emphasis on growing our economy to 6%, it's unlikely that that's what happens. Then we also need to show some of the challenges that we face as far as the pavement age is concerned. Now, the engineers amongst us will recognize that, you know, a road, by the way, when we talk about the pavement, we're talking about the stuff we drive on, not the stuff we walk on. Yeah. There's a sidewalk in engineering, so we talk about the road pavement. The pavement is designed for a particular lifespan, and we usually design it for 20 years. But within that 20-year period, we have to carry out kindly and constantly various type of maintenance work. Yeah, that's what we need to do. Unfortunately, as you can see, there's a large portion of our network, just over 60% of the network, if you look at the 2007 one over there, that 60% of the network has reached its design life. So that means that we have to do some major, what we call structural work, to bring this back into its intended thread. That is what we've got, and you can see what the network is. Even the red line, for instance, if we include the red bit in there, which is 21 to 25 years, then you see that about 75% of our network is reaching its design life, end of its design life. Multiply effects of road investment. I trust that I am talking to the converted in this gathering over here in terms of what roads actually do, and if you fully aware, I'm sure, that what our minister believes in and the slogan of our Department of Transport, that transport is the heartbeat of the social and economic development of South Africa, and these are some of the benefits that we can talk about, how this happens, and that there is no doubt, and that nobody disputes the fact that there is a multiplier effect as far as roads are concerned. The dispute already is, or debate, I should say, rather than dispute, is whether the multiplier effect is 4 or 6. But we all accept that there is a multiplier effect. What we do, Chair, we every alternative year, 1 year we look at how we're doing as far as corporate governance is doing in the agency, and we get totally independent bodies from outside to come and check over here. On the areas of governance listed over here is the various areas that these people will come and look at, and then this next year we will do the following year. We also make work in terms of we do a review of the board. And an independent assessor is also coming to do a review of the board. And last year we did the governance one, and we wanted to show you in terms of where do we stand as far as the governance is concerned in that. And we're very pleased to note that some of the areas where we were in the red means that it's either non-existent or requires major improvement in that over the years that we have improved it and we have gone into the green areas over there, as you can see. and this is the budget of talking about the board evaluation, we are not doing that independently as well. And for us in the agency, the issues around governance are very, very, very important. I don't think, and I'm sure the honourable members will agree with me, that we cannot compromise as far as governance issues are concerned. That is actually the foundation on which we build our democratic institutions. This slide just again talks to what I've already spoken, but in addition to that, there are two other things. One is we do an enterprise-wide risk management. We do have a risk register. We have an internal audit review, which is also done by internal and external people. And on the external panel, we have the Auditor General's office also sitting on there. So it's not just done with, you know, some people we know, but also independent in terms of the AG's office itself, who sits on that. Then, of course, we've got a prevention of fraud and corruption hotline. It's totally anonymous. And anything we get reported in there will always be investigated independently, and that is the detail of where one can phone or fax or email to us where things need to get attended to. I must say that all the time since we've had this thing running, our main complaints come from bad taxi drivers, but we shouldn't talk about taxi drivers on over here. What this, again, it's in a picture form. You saw earlier on the histogram as far as what the age of the pavement is and that. But we thought in a picture form we will also show as to what are the condition of the pavement. That gives you on the entire 16,000 kilometers. The green shows where it is good. The yellow shows fair. And the red are the hot spots in terms of where the roads are in a poor condition. So that's in a pictorial form. Then, as we know, that what our focus areas are, one of them is around the congestion on our roads. Now, with respect to our friends and families and friends and colleagues and comrades, you know, the congestion happens with Caltech maintenance. And I don't mean to be provincial or anything, but that is a fact. Then there is some congestion in the Durban to the Maritzburg sort of area, and then a little bit in terms of where this house is. Around Cape Town and stuff. And it's most unfortunate that many a time, you know, you find the people living in Gauteng will complain about the congestion. The rest of our network, we just don't have that much traffic. We should be honest about this. And you see the next slide actually shows you what the numbers are, right? The green, yeah, and you can see that that's just over 70% of our network has about 5,000 vehicles. Traveling on it, and this is the average annual daily traffic on a daily basis. The one which is greater than 50,000 is a very small portion. It's on the top over there, 15,000. Yeah? But the area that we need to look at is, of course, the yellow ones, basically, in terms of any traffic which is over the 10,000, and then you can see the stuff between 20,000 and 50,000 is starting to increase. And this is also a good reflection in terms of what's happening to our economy. And we need to make sure that as far as road infrastructure is concerned, that we can meet the demand which has been put onto our economy. And we all want our economy to grow. This slide shows in terms of what the density is. And again, you'll see that the blue line near the bottom shows the density in terms of our whole country. And then in terms of the red line, the reason that you see the drop as far as national roads is concerned, it's not that there has been a drop in the amount of vehicles on our roads. That is because we've incorporated a number of roads from the Northern Cape into the National Road Network, and as we know, there isn't the same traffic in the Northern Cape. But I reckon this will probably go back up to around 2 or just over 2 again, as far as the density on the roads is concerned. Now, it's important for us to note as far as what the standard will be as far as road space is concerned. I want to make hopefully people will understand that we are not responsible for enforcement of law on our roads. The fact that somebody is a bad driver or misbehaves on our road, somebody who gets into a car while they're drunk in there, somebody can't do anything about that because that's not our competency. The competency of our provinces and our local authorities, the metro police that we see. However, it is our responsibility to make sure that we provide a safely engineered road. meaning to say that as far as what we call the geometry of the road is concerned, you know, the bends, the straights, etc., and so forth, the hills and uphills and downhills, that those are safely engineered, the barriers in the right place, properly signposted, the road marking is up to scratch. So that's what we mean by a safely engineered road. Now, having said that, we also support the Arrive Alive campaign. And our support mainly is there in terms of providing statistics, etc., so that we can see what happens. And our statistics that we provide, not of the incidents that have happened, that is the ambit of the Road Traffic Management Corporation, for the number of vehicles traveling, the type of vehicles traveling, that's the data we collect for our use. And the other area that we as a road agency are listening, involved in and that we concentrate on is what we call the educational programs. And our emphasis is on the primary school children, because we believe that we need to start early on in the year to start showing children, learners, as to how to use the road. It's very important for them to understand how to use the road. We've gone to the extent where we have produced manuals and curriculum for school teachers to use in the schools, and we have hopefully got it accepted by the Department of Department of Education. So that becomes an integral part of the overall management system of the road network in terms of what we mean by our contribution to road safety. Then we take a number of other initiatives, and the initiatives that we will do through our routine road maintenance, where we try and make sure that people have, as I said, a safety engineered road, and that includes fixing of potholes, etc., and so forth, that we don't have potholes on our roads for longer than an acceptable period. Yeah? And we will also, of course, run special road safety projects like at Kennedy School. One other contribution that I believe that we've made to the road safety programs is one of the things that we find that on our roads is that how do we manage when there's an incident that gets registered? And an incident can be from a breakdown on the road of a vehicle right down to a crash which has taken place. How do we manage that? Now again, our emergency services are responsible for the provision of the service and not the National Roads Agency. So what did we do? We recognize that there is a golden hour in case of a crash. If you talk to the medical people, they'll talk about the golden hour. So we need to have the facilities available to come to the incident, locate it, see what is happening, and provide the necessary assistance to that, and making sure that these things are managed efficiently. To this effect, what we did is that we developed, together with the emergency services, some guidelines and protocols. That is what we've done as to how the communication works. We've also produced, and you can see the five pillars of the IMS system, where we've also produced SACWA-accredited orders for people to attend from our emergency services. And that again was a contribution from the National Roads Agency. But we don't run the courses themselves, we've handed them over to the various colleges, our traffic colleges that we have, training colleges of traffic officers, and they will take it up from there. But the incident management system is something that was initiated, and we work very closely with the Department of Transport, and this becomes all part of the whole Arrive Alive campaign. So I think people need to understand Arrive Alive campaign is not just some publicity that we provide over Easter, school holidays, and over Christmas. There are a lot of things happening behind the scenes that people don't always know of. Our business plan going forward is required. I think we all know that the importance of a stable flow of funding. And where is this hitting us these days? With the euphoria and the right euphoria that we have as far as our bid for the World Cup, the Soccer World Cup here. You know, we've already done our honors in rugby, so we hopefully will do the same. And I'm sure we will do, maybe not exactly the same, but we'll at least get to the same, because I'm confident of that. that this is again brought home to us as to why it's important on two things. One is the timely maintenance of our road infrastructure. The problem with us is that once we spend our money on our roads, and it doesn't matter if it's a municipal road or a national road or a provincial road, because we don't see the immediate effect of a damaged road. You know, the guy who pulls it is the driver. Not all of us feel the same, yeah? So we neglect the maintenance. So what we do, our expenditure becomes very, very lumpy. And when it becomes lumpy, we have a problem in terms of pricing, etc., and the inflationary growth. What we try to do with the service over here is to try and keep it an equal on an even keel, but if it goes into the green, that is still fine. That is still fine. You have to go sort of bobs along there, but it's fine. Because there or there, somewhere or the other, we end up paying more than what we should do, and of course, we not only do we pay in terms of monetary, but the damage that it causes and the loss in our economy as well. So that's the other area that we come from. Then I want to show a couple of slides now in terms of what the recent prices are doing to the construction industry. If you look at this, we have four indices which dictate to us in terms of what constitutes what we call the construction price adjustment factor, the CPAF. The four indices, the civil engineering plant index, this is your red line over there. Yeah. Then you've got the fuel index. Now the fuel index we're talking about, this is this line going all over the show here, that is for diesel, not for bitumen. I'll show a different slide as to what happens to bitumen. The bitumen is a standalone on its own where we pay on invoice. Whatever the price comes in, you've got to pay for that. But the fuel is index. And you can see what's happening over there. Then we have the civil engineering materials index, which is this one over here. And then we have the labor index, right? The labor index is the green one in there, the green one in there, and the CPI is that purple one there with the cross. Yes. And you can see it's the labor index which is keeping in line with CPI, but everything else is above that particular one. And the result of that is the following. If you look at the indices over there, then the CPI is green one, and then the blue one is the producer price index, and this is the one that we have to pay. So you can see the gap between there and the blue. Part of our challenge is to make sure that we try and convince Treasury that even when they do the allocation for that 83% of the road that they do, they will at least pay us somewhere by the blue as opposed to the green. They don't even give us the green in terms of the allocation. And this is a gap that we always have to make up. And that is the reason for the increase in the cost. It's something that we don't control at all. But also what that indicates to us, that when we do our plans and we do our estimates, etc., where we turn around and say, that this year we're going to do 100 kilometers of road, whatever action we're going to take, you know, in terms of maintenance, new or old or whatever. That over there dictates at the end of the day whether we can do 100 kilometers or 80 kilometers. And that, unfortunately, is not something that we control at all. And then the next slide, I just want to show you what the trend has been as far as bitumen is concerned. This is the count. And we've got the figure from 2000 of the day where we were just over 1500 rand a ton to where we are July 2007, 3100 rand a ton. So you can see the increase from 2000 to July 2007 what it is. And again, that we don't control. The talk is about price of oil going up to $100 a barrel. You know, that's going to affect the data here. And of course, the yellow line that you saw on the previous slide is a few things. So these are the challenges that we face. This slide basically shows that in terms of what we ask for, the budget request, which is the green line over here, and the yellow is the budget allocation, and then what we do is that we work out the deficit, and we show a cumulative deficit. And that will rise all the time, unfortunately. If there was that showing over there, no matter how small that is, right, the size of that doesn't matter. The fact that it is there, unfortunately, causes this particular problem, and then we talk about backlog as far as the expenditure is concerned. This particular slide shows in terms of what the rent per kilometer, you see just the trend that we're showing. I think we should ignore the bricks around by the 70s. We know exactly what happened in the 70s as far as road building was concerned in South Africa. And then there was a decline, unfortunately, from the 1990s. But there is a nice increase coming in since around about 2005. And we're hoping that that will at least go a little bit higher. We'd like to see the thing go up to about 600,000 rand a kilometer in the short term. But of course, in the medium term, we'd like to see the thing go a bit higher. This is just an indication that over the next 3 years, 4 years, in terms of what we have budgeted for, in terms of what we want to do, and where we're going to spend the money, and what kind of work that we're going to be carrying out. And this just shows it in pictorial form. And you will find that generally where we're talking about the capital, CapEx projects on that line will indicate to the red lines that you saw earlier on, you know, where we said what the condition of the road is. That's the one thing. The second thing that we've always followed as a philosophy in the agency is that we will always maintain the roads which are in a good condition, we will maintain them. We do not want to see the roads which are in a good condition deteriorate even to a fair condition and definitely not into a poor condition. So you maintain that particular scenario, and then what you want to do is slowly move the fair into the good and the poor into the fair to start off with, preferably immediately into the good, if not at least into the fair. So, and there are calculations to be done that we can show you that if you do not spend 1 rand timelessly, it can cost you up to 18 rand or 18 times more to fix the road. So that kindness, maintenance of the road, spending the 1 rand is very, very important. This change just shows you in terms of what the summary is of the budget when from 2006 to 2007, what the budget was, what the actual allocation was from Treasury, and what they have, what the budget was for the current financial year and going forward. And this figure over here I call a promise. We will have to wait till the actual budget is announced to see whether we will get that actual money or not, and then we give you a breakdown in terms of how do we spend the money that you are in the summer for. Let's just show this in a graphical form, and that is the operational expenditure that we're showing as to what we're going to be spending and on what we can see from the legend as to what we're going to spend the money on over here. And you can see the different type of maintenance, whether it's periodic, special, routine, and ad hoc maintenance, where the bulk of the money does get spent. Again, like I said earlier on, in terms of how do we want to maintain our roads. So this is a huge asset that we cannot allow to be generated. This shows in a graphical form the capital expenditure, again, that you can see where we're spending the money on, and what the allowances that we've made. This particular one shows now the toll operating summary, and for the toll roads, you know that we do operate toll roads as well as part of our portfolio and mandate in the National Roads Agency. And this is what we, again, showing what the budget was for 2006-07, the actual, and then what we've got for going up forward as far as the budget is concerned. And here we need to take note of the fact that this is money that we borrowed. So that means we have to repay it, and you can see what the finance charges are. That's the second last line of that particular slide as to what the finance charges are in terms of what we're doing. This is again in graphical form showing the operational expenditure for the toll roads. This shows the capital expenditure again in terms of what we're going to be spending. Then it comes to another portion of the work that we do in the National Roads Agency chair. Now, sometimes I believe when we talk about community development, it becomes a bit of a misnomer. Because it is my sincere belief in the agency that any project that we do develops the community. The fact, and you can see that, and we'll show you a slide, it is reported in the annual report as to the number of jobs. That alone leads to community development. But we have a certain emphasis that we place on in terms of our districts and in terms of our what we call working in our village areas, in our villages. And one of the things that we do also emphasize there is the whole issue around road safety, where we will provide additional pedestrian bridges, provide safe walking spaces for people to walk on. Because one of the things that we need to accept that in our country, irrespective of what the law says or the rules of the road are, that there should be no pedestrians on our road. The fact is that the way development takes place adjacent to our roads is going to happen. And we can't ignore that. We can't ignore that. About 2 weeks ago, we dealt with a project that we did up in the Duane area. And if any of you do go up that way, you should have a look at that. And it's most unfortunate that the new housing that has taken place has been put onto the eastern side of the highway, and then on the western side we've got the schools and the shops and everything. I would have appreciated, I really would have admired it if the different departments would have turned around and let's do the same thing again. But we lost that argument. When I say we within the Department of the Transport Fraternity. But the option wasn't there for us to do nothing. We had to do something about it. So we have now provided a road over, road bridge and a pedestrian bridge just to make sure that people can cross the road safely. One of the things which was promoted at the time was that we should provide a robot. Now, a robot in the middle of the National Highway Park. People will still cross the road safely. We won't be coming on the side, that's right. But what I'm saying, so we have to do something. And we do that as part of our approach to the community development. So it's sort of a specific focus that we have. But also we don't just go there willy-nilly and do this without actually doing what we call identification, and we do an impact assessment, and you know, how do we choose projects. It would have been nice if we could have turned around and said that we've got sufficient money and we're going to do everything. Unfortunately, we have to choose. And one of the things that, you know, we pick up back for always, and I hope that's not what I'm going to pick up here this afternoon, is that you don't spend sufficient in my province, right? You're doing more in the other province. But we have to go through a selection process. And like I always maintain, there isn't a single project that we will choose which will be a wrong project. I don't believe there's such a thing as a wrong project, given the need in our country. Given the need in our country. But because of the limited resources that we have, you know, one has to take that into account in the three phases to the approach that we have. And this is the second phase where we will do the pre-study audit. We look at the scope of the project. We'll see what type of project it is. There's sort of two sides that we do. And then we turn around and at the end of the day, we will, in terms of far as empowerment and that is concerned, we'll pay a greater premium for that, as long as it's part of the wider development in that region. And that is important, and you'll see every project that we do over here is informed by what the province and the district want. We do not go around choosing a project on our own. Although, as I said, people will always come to us, why aren't we spending enough in our province? But we have to make a choice. And it's not always nice to get involved with that kind of complaint, but it does happen. And then, of course, phase three is the actual implementation. And again, I want to just point out that what we've done with the Duane area is just the nearest example that I can show you. You know, we've done a similar thing like in Pattenburg Bay, but there we worked with the municipality. And finally, the municipality the other day awarded the tenders in terms of what we need to do, make the safe stopping places for the taxis. Again, we worked in conjunction with the city, but they didn't go out and do the stuff at the same time that we did when we did the pedestrian bridges around Pattenburg Bay. And along the N2, going from George towards Nightland, that's part of the stuff that we've done. Again, it's part of the whole Arise Alive campaign and the community development and safety program. The next couple of slides is just what, in terms of our forecast, is what we're going to be doing this year. And I trust that we will still meet our forecast around this project that we have intended to do. And again, the next couple of slides is just going to show you in detail in terms of where the projects are, what the actual expenditure is, what the budget is, and that is what shows on those slides of the Then we come to the other part of our business, the toll roads. Again, we need to list what we're doing. You can see the entrance to Sikama. Those of us who live in that part of the Eastern Cape, and if you drive around there, you can see the project is well underway, under construction. And the tender price for that was $343 million, excluding VAT. Excluding VAT as to what it is. And then I trust that two Fridays ago, it wasn't publicized in the Cape, but it was in the Sunday press as well, in terms of what the minister has announced, our honorable minister, Jeff Kodeva, has announced, in terms of what we're doing in the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Scheme at the college. One other thing that I need to note at this point, and I think it's important for us to take cognizance of that, but just building on more roads, more lanes, etc., is not going to solve our problem at all. Because we understand our economy. So you'll find that these projects that we do are integrated as part of a transport strategy. And the two things that we contribute into in this over here, specifically on this, a couple of other things as well, is what we call the intelligent transport system. Now, those of you who have been traveling between Johannesburg and Pretoria, you had the opportunity, you'll see all those cameras that we've put it on along the road in there. Yeah? That is part of what we call the ICS system. It's running, it's a pilot project, it's been running for a year already, and that is what we're going to do. Now, research is shown. With the cooperation of the drivers, we can increase the capacity between 20% and 25%. So that means that we're going to better utilize our existing road infrastructure and not just keep on building more roads. As part of the scheme, is that we're going to be encouraging them to have dedicated lanes for public transport, where we're going to have the HOV, and this is not going to be once a year, every October, for 1 week, with your currency. We are building the capacity now already in the network that we're expanding and improving to allow for this. And this is one of the ways that we're going to deal with the issues around congestion on our roads. And then we've listed, of course, the others as well, that we're continuing to do. Then we've still got these on the books, which has been around there, unfortunately, for over 5 years now. But we're making sure progress in terms of convincing people as to the importance of these. This is the N1, N2 winding route here in the Cape, the Wild Coast Road between Durban and East London, or whichever way we want to take it. And then, of course, there's the ring road around Cape Town, the R300. Okay, then moving on to the financial year 2006-2007, and that tells you the booklet that you've got, the actual annual report. What are the conditions of the road that we measure? And these are measurable things. These are not just things that we are theoretical in that, right? We measure the school travel exposure, the low-rust, high texture, and of course the bridge condition. Now we talk about vehicle operating costs. If we do not have the vehicle operating costs that especially those three criteria, the smooth travel exposure, the low rust exposure, and high texture composure, the road will also be unsafe. And that is what we always measure and to be able to put in. And you can see what it is. Our target for 2006-2007 for the smooth travel exposure was 95%. We have reached actually 94%. And one of the reasons, and this is not an excuse that I'm making, is that we've incorporated under 2,000 kilometers of road this year from the provinces into the national road network in the very early slide that I showed you. And that, given the age of the pavement, etc., so that is what it is. But again, it's 94 and not 84 or something, which would have been an area of concern for us. Similarly, as far as the rut exposure, now the rut exposure, we've been on target, as you can see. The rut exposure is when you drive on the road, you know, sometimes you see that, especially in the flow lane, where the heavy vehicles travel, you see that middle money. Now, if you don't fix that, that is where you get backlog planning and in the wet, the cars leave the road. So that is what it is. And again, it's something that we measure, and that has been the result. As part of the rough exposure. A high texture exposure, this is what gives you what you and I call the skid resistance. And that the texture that we measure in terms of what the grip would be or what the an engineering term we call the friction between the tire and the road, and as you know, the width of the tire is 4 by 2/4. So these three things combine to give us, again, a safe road, and this is what I was talking about earlier, in terms of our responsibility to be giving the people a safely engineered road. There's nothing we can do other than, of course, assurance enough, educate and encourage people to become responsible drivers on our road. That we don't control, but this is something we control, and this is the result, as you can see. And as far as actually is concerned, we've done better than what our targets are. In any case, I think we've got over 4,000 bridges these days. We have measured every bridge, or examined every bridge on our network, on the national road network, that we've done. And we've got what we call the bridge condition exposure. Our target for that was 90%. We've been working on this over the last 2 years only. And, of course, we're at about 84 as opposed to 90. We're not unduly concerned about that, because we know that we will be able to meet our target as well, seeing that we've only been busy with this over the last 2 years. But to my knowledge, I want to inform the House that we don't have a bridge back for us in America, not so long ago, because we have good records of what the conditions of our bridges are. And that, again, is on our national road network. Moving on, in terms of what our operating expenditure was for this, in 2005-2006, the number of projects we did were 133, you'll see in the blue. This year we did 156 projects in the different areas over there. The length of road that we did over last year was 15,000. This year we did about 15,000 in road, give or take a few kilometers, but the expenditure was 1.2 billion as opposed to last year, and this current year, of course, is 1.3 billion. That was the operating expenditure on our road. This was the capital expenditure on the non-toll road, and the reason for the increase is that, as I showed you earlier, in terms of the age of the pavement, we need to spend more money to try and bring that back up to scratch that we want. Then our toll road operating expenditure, again you can see the different areas and the difference between the previous financial year and the current financial year. Again, on our capital expenditure, again, these are the figures that we've got in terms of what we've got for new facilities. And one of the things that we've got in the new facilities here that I need to point out is what we call the traffic control centers that we're building. Overloading is a huge problem on our road. Again, it's an issue to do with law enforcement. And overloading, we lose something like over 600 million rand a year. Again, this is not damage that we see needed. But that is a loss that we incur because of the unscrupulous behavior of our hauliers. And there's a whole lot of other things we do with them to try and make them responsible citizens. But one of the things we do is build these what we call traffic control centers, the very state of the art stuff that we do. Then the work that we do, and we call this empowerment. Now, one of the concentrations for us is not only maximizing our labor, but we promote SMMEs very, very vigorously in the national road agency, to the extent that on our routine road maintenance care, 80% of the work must be done by SMMEs, of which, of that 80%, 90% of it must be done by black contractors. And that is what we do. And the result of that, as you can see, that we had 600 contractors working on the thing, 170 one which were non-ABB black, affirmable business enterprises, with 472 of those working there, you can see what the total range that we want. Although we had fewer of them working here this year than we had the previous year, the expenditure, total range value, is considerably higher than it was in the past. Again, in terms of the public-private partnership, and these guys do make a fairly large contribution. Large contribution to the fiscus enabled for us to be able to maintain and expand our road network, and you can see what the annual capital and maintenance expenditure for 2006-2007 was. on the three concession roads that we've blocked, that's the N3, the N4, Maputo Development Corridor, and the Platinum Highway. And you can see the capital expenditure was $240 million, operational was $315 million, cumulative of just over $6.2 billion. Now that is the kind of money that we have spent, which would have had to come from the fiscal, which is not now coming from the fiscal, but the private sector is contributing to that. So this is the capital expenditure, again, showing in terms of what they are going to spend in the future, and again, you can see that it's a considerable sum of money that they are going to be spending. This is just to show you the number of contracts we've awarded in the annual report is reported for the non-toll network, $2.6 billion. Now, the question will arise that how do you award contracts of a greater value than your budget? I need to explain this. There's no trigger. The projects that we do very rarely last for shorter than 6. Most of our projects do last over a couple of financial years. So we will award the contract in this financial year. Because the payment only has to be done in the future, we can award the contract. And then we need to make sure that we get the budget to have a cash from Treasury to be able to pay them. Because that's the nature of the construction project. You know, they usually last 18 months to 24 months. So that's the number of contracts that we've awarded. As you can see, the total value of the contracts awarded in that particular financial year were over $4 billion, which is probably twice as much as we did in the 2005-2006 year. And again, we need to say thank you very much as far as that is concerned, because Treasury over the years has been allocating. If you remember the graph I showed, the trend in terms of expenditure per rand, that is increasing, and that's the result of that. I've mentioned early on, as far as the ITS is concerned, to better manage our traffic and better utilize our existing infrastructure. This is what we've already got in place over there, and we've spent 50 million rand in the last financial year to do that, and the red line basically shows the areas being monitored currently with the ITS and pilots. And that will now be extended to right around the ring road that you see, the blue bit over there, that bit over there. All of that, this will go further up there, and it's going to go along there and come down to a point around there going to the airport in that particular area over there as well. So this is the new extension that we're talking about. I didn't realize that we've gone in terms of what the extent is going to be. The red lines that you can see and what the projected costs are going to be as far as that's concerned. And then these are our future projects that we're talking about in terms of the number of points that we're going to do. We also have a property portfolio. And you will see in our annual report that although we have an unqualified report, and we are very happy to say that we manage that very rigorously to make sure that we get an unqualified report, but there is a note being made about the portfolio. And even if I should say to myself, Chair, with your permission, we try very hard to try and understand and recognize and identify all the properties that we own. We accept that there are challenges for us, we accept that there are problems that we face, especially from the deeds office trying to get records. There are not very good records, but we've got a whole program. And I think we're making a good effort on that, and you'll find that the Auditor General has, over the years, actually acknowledged the effort that we are making to bring this up to scratch. But it is an ongoing record for us. Especially with the roads that we've incorporated recently from the provinces, we don't have good records. So we have to do this from basic principles to identify where they are. A few years ago, Chair, we had actually suggested certain changes to the legislation to assist us in expediting the identification process, and that unfortunately it hasn't made much progress as far as the legislation is concerned. And my appeal to this House is that, of course, any kind of assistance as far as that's concerned would be very, very useful. Then, of course, the environmental management is also important for us. And you can see what we have done. And we are working towards getting ISO 1400 accredited as far as the liaison agency is concerned. Then some figures, as far as were before, socio-economic development, the values of the work performed for the non-followers. Again, you can see the SMMEs, the number of SMMEs, which is basically a repeat of the other slide that I showed you earlier on, so I'm not going to dwell very much on that. This one is, I haven't showed before in terms of the jobs we created, and this is reported in the annual report, and I'd say these are audited figures, they're not the figures that we try and put up. And you can see the equivalent jobs, full-time jobs that we've created is over 8,000. And of course, when we talk about this in person hours, it sounds very, very impressive that we had over 16 million job hours, person hours created over there. The number of job opportunities realized and the breakdown of in terms of male and female as to what we've done, and of course the rand value at the end of the day is over 371 million rand that we've done. Same thing continuing with the jobs created in the different areas of the day, and again you can see what the total has been as far as the toll road is concerned. The previous one was of course on the non-toll road. If you combine the two together, it's nearly give or take a billion rand of wages that we've paid into the market if you combine the two together. The training, and this is always debatable in terms of whether one is doing sufficient on training, and you can see a breakdown of it again on non-toll road and the toll road. And the total of that is just over 6 million rand. Then of course in terms of the staff complement within the agency, at the time that the report was produced, there's 149 total members of staff in the agency, of which 48.3% or 48% are female and 52% are male. Further breakdown of that in terms of the race, 56% of the staff of the agency is black and 44% is white. And then in terms of males that we've got over there, 44% of the males are black and 56% are white. And our major challenge in this comes in the engineering. I think we're all talking about the shortage of engineers, we all recognize it. But that shortage is not unique to South Africa. Our skills that we've got in terms of engineering are mobile. Now, I was, you know, quite intrigued yesterday to see our Minister of Finance, although he concentrated on the health sector, I don't know if you picked it up in the press, that he had a go at the developed countries which are taking our skilled people from our continent and our developing countries. That's the reality. That's the competition we face. If I don't like things over here in this country, I've got skills which are mobile, I move. For whatever reason. But the same token, our challenge is to attract people to come into our country. And that is what our challenge is. But the major constraint we face on that, and we have faced this as an agency here. And again, I'm making an appeal. To try and get work permits out of our home affairs, man, is a huge challenge. And I'm not complaining about that, I'm just taking a new fact. We've lost people who've given up on us simply because we couldn't get a work permit. We lost a guy who was prepared to come for us to work here, and then he told me, no, straight, I'm going to Norway, everything is in place. And he went to Norway. Because we couldn't find it, he gets the place where we're done. Females per nation, you can see, 71% of our females are black, and the remainder are white. Now we always give care that we're coming to the end of our presentation, is that where there's a road, there's a way. These are pictures that we've done, just a collage of pictures showing the various bits of kind of work that we're involved in, from what we call the safety program to the school children that you see, to helping and working with the department through the Shovakalula program, where we provide the bicycles and we will try and fix the tracks, etc., on which they ride, and of course our major highways that you see there. And like we say, roads are not merely transportation convenience, but life-giving arteries. driving the wheels of the economy forward that we've got, when the roads are built and maintained, everything improves. And then we'd like to ask the question that, can we imagine South Africa without roads? I think it's a very scary thought. Last but not least, Chair, I will always use this particular quotation from one of my favorite economists in the world. He's a Nobel laureate. So he talks, and I think it's something we should reflect on. So he says, poverty of life lies not merely in the impoverished state which the person actually lives, but also in the lack of real opportunity. And we do believe that within the natural world agencies, we actually create the opportunities for people to better their lives, so that it's not just an empty rhetoric when we say that we need to improve the lives or better quality of life for all. We are the ones who create the opportunities, and we will need to continue creating those opportunities. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, honourable members, without wasting any time, I give you the opportunity to engage with the presentation on climate standards. I don't know how South Africa would look like without hope. Is it without hope?
Yes, without hope. You asked the question.
It will definitely look that much.
Yeah. I'll display your awesome laugh at that.
Well, the footpaths all over. Over the mountains, in the bush. While you're walking, you will meet the line of
well, this.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, it is indeed a marathon sort of a presentation. Now, late in the afternoon, having had now something put in the bed, everything, the men regulating up there, closes. Don't listen to how it closes. Chairman, I've got only two questions, which always worries me. Yeah, age counts, would it? You found out from, you know, one or two. Thank you. You're a testament. Chairperson, the other thing that actually worries me, when you talk of our roads, we've got these toll gates. They just rise speed. What actually happened to those monies of the toll gates? And how are they being monitored? Because to me, if you want your system, give your system. If you don't want your system, they don't give it. And to me, that tells me that if they want to pocket money, they can give it to you, they can give the receipt to this one, and the next car they can pocket the money, because they operate that gate. There's nothing that counts the car, that the car has gone past. So many cars have passed, and so many must have been received. And then that way opens up cash, kind of one, to me. And we cannot control, and we just pay money. That's another thing that, how do we monitor that? So that whatever revenue is collected there, it goes that way it should be going to. My mind is that the toll gates are there to maintain the road. Now, the other thing, our roads are turn-based, deteriorate. And, you know, in the past, they had inspectors. Almost anything. I'm sure they would even have a latrine inspectors in the past. So everything has an inspector. Now, in our dispensation, who inspects the roads? Nobody. Now, what do they say, the heavy vehicles, when they come to the toll gate, they pay so much? Will probably be but that does not mean that they are not damaging the roads. So these are some of the things that, how do we monitor, and in our maintenance, what do we maintain? Do maintenance when we start seeing pitholes, or when do we inspect them? Those are some of the things that have worried me, those two things. If I can only be taken aboard of that, then I'll have a question. Thank you.
Just in the, healthier listening of the conversation, I took note of the comment you made about why is the frog the one of the frog? And I want to encourage members not to be intimidated. We are representing progress here. Yes,
exactly.
Unlike in the LA, here we are representing progress. So nothing should stop you from raising your issue that has got to do with your problem in particular. Because there are still issues that I would want to raise of a particular problem.
My question is around the concession also. What I want to find out exactly what is this relationship between the concession holder, the agency, and the national department. I think also, for Google City, what I find is very difficult to understand, how does this thing work of the services? Who does these roads belong to? In the presentation, they didn't mention anything of any concession roads in the future. But my understanding is that the repairs on the N1 just north of Bloemfontein, currently they are on widening the N1. Is that a concession? Because it's a battle leadership of the contract there. Because I was probably sitting on the plane one day from Bloemfontein to Cape Town, and in the back of me was this loudmouth guy talking about the project manager of the battle leadership. On that project, and he was telling the guy next to him, he said, this road belongs to them. They are repairing it. The cost for that road, I think, is R250 million. They are still paying it to make correction of the cost. So, what is there a concession holder on the and what is this relationship? And what happens to the service of the service teacher? Much more importantly, how does the community benefit from the concession? Because I cannot see them benefiting anything, because Battle Reef is a multi, they're one of the big five. In terms of construction, how does the community benefit from it? And I think about the week ago, Shepherdson, I think we were in that meeting where the presentation was made on the transport. And the question came, and I don't know if this is the one that you want to raise, on the N2 Transkei. Who does that road belong to? So there was a big discussion of the delegation from the Eastern Cape. But although it's the N2 road, they're still responsible for maintenance or something like that. I found that very interesting, because the N road is linked to the national road, and they say no, they're responsible for that. Shepherdson, and the last question is on the potter. CRC is an acceptable period for the repairment. What is that acceptable period? Because you see a pothole getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and then, what is that? If I want to complain about the pothole, because my constituency is south of Bloemfontein. On the N1, this is off the N1. And the people come and complain, but they say, fuck over this. You know, somebody that's going to fix it up, but what? If they start complaining, they know that the acceptable period is still looking at. Can I have that acceptable period? Thank you, sir.
Hello. Yes, sir. nine provinces, the budget, how is this budget allocated to nine provinces? What criteria is in use so that every province gets its share? The national roads, the provincial roads, and then the municipality roads. How is the road being mapped? This is a national road, this is a provincial road, this is a municipal road. If it is a municipal road, who maintains the road? Because in my province, there are many roads which are deteriorating, which were formerly good, hard roads. But there's no maintenance whatsoever. The dressing, that continuous dressing of roads, like you discover when you drive from Cape Town to Johannesburg on the N1. Since I came to Cape Town, this road has dressed. Every time you go, there's a road stop where you have to stop so that the oncoming cars is passed before you can move. There's ongoing dressing, but in my province, there is no dressing any longer for the past 30 years. And when you say when there is a possible, when we can spend it around, it's better than to spend that one rand, than to spend 18 rand or 20 rand later down the road. What you're saying is not happening in most of our roads in my province. You know, and that is unfortunate. Because we are seeing South Africa many years to come. Roads which were existing, good roads were existing, because they were not maintained, they would be cut. The toll roads, toll gates are increasing every day. They are increasing. You have toll roads, one toll road there, one toll road there. There's another toll road coming in the street, and another toll road coming. They're increasing by day. Who controls, who says when to the toll road, toll gate, I mean, come into play? You know, and are the toll roads, the privatization of the toll roads, are they going to be phased out? In the long run, down the line, that they will become again, you know, government roads. Is there a period of which I believe it should be like that? Let me for a check.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. I thought you had your preference of going to speak of the just after a while, she felt terrible. That's not the only national road in the Northwest that is in such a mess. And I think the reference, the speaking of Northwest. Yes, Northwest. Very, very bad.
Yeah.
There's no road in the Northwest that one can really travel to stay on. Well, of course, let me not say there's no road. In terms of my experience, it was the Northwest road. You even get announcements on radio that you not take this road because some spot roads have become so bad that you must now. And the reason why I'm raising this thing of the Northwest, especially after Warren,
It's because now the trend, what the trucks are doing, they would leave either Johannesburg and drive through Kimberley to France, because they are avoiding that road that would be accessible. And what are the implications of that? It means that for this road, the Free State movement in Johannesburg gets overloaded with all these trucks and cars that are avoiding that road. And it's not the first time this thing was raised with some. I remember sometimes last year, it was in July. There was a commitment made by Sandor in terms of working that kind of road. But the work that has been done the last time when I drove through Dover was just a piece of fixing two or three potholes. But the issue there is the breadth of the road and all the sort of things that are causing a lesser accident, particularly it's not a nice thing to travel that road in the evening. It's absolutely not safe to travel that road.
Secondly,
the relationship between the SANRAL and your provincial road agency. When we took Parliament to the people with the NCOC program, I think it was in Kaunda. I'm not sure whether it was in Kaunda. I even saw a district road agent, a board of district road agents. And I asked myself, hey, do we now have also a district road agent? And I asked a member from Kaunda and said to me, no, you ain't Kaunda in Kaunda. That's how we are a band. I don't know if it was Chip Chop or what, but the board that I saw that made this architect said Gauteng, I can't remember which district it is, but it says district road agent. If they are, it would be good to get an understanding of how you relate with this provincial and road agent. A very important point you raised is integrated planning. When you spoke of the dollars that could relate to it, one uses that word twice, and it really didn't make sense when you look at the kind of work that has been done on the road, which does not really take into account integrated planning. On the other side, the particular development that takes place on the other side, it's another development. You don't really know exactly what's going to happen. And I think it's a very important point, which brings to the fore where the question is whether is the Department of Transport, of course, SANRAL being its agency, doing certain things. Is there any form of an integrated approach in terms of infrastructure development? Where you build a school next to a national road, what then happens to that? What is the relationship with the Department of Education and so forth? And I think it's quite important. That. Lastly, the Auditor General says that you incurred a loss of 122 million. What are the reasons of the other business? And how do you see yourself reversing the situation to a point where, as SANRAL, you will get your money back? I think you were trying, maybe I might have missed, that you said something like, the environment, the built environment, and the implications of the built environment, or the character of the built environment, and how it has that implication on financial flows, management, and so forth.
you are able to pick up on that.
Okay, let's get the
thanks for that. There's a number of questions which are related to hopefully that I'll be able to answer that successfully. But if not, please come back to them. As far as the toll gate and the money and that are concerned, there are three ways that we monitor. First is what we call automatic vehicle counters that we have. And you see those loops that you see in the ground when you come to a toll plaza. That's where the vehicle gets counted, and etc. So that's the one thing. Then once you go past the plaza, we have what we call the cell counter. And that one just measures the vehicle. It just says it's a heavy vehicle or a light vehicle. Well, the first one tells you whether it's 4 axles, 2 axles, 3 axles. And then we have the management information system, which then collates the two and tells us exactly whether what size of vehicle is gone, which hasn't gone, etc. And that's how we monitor the whole thing. We, of course, encourage people always to ask for the receipt. But there's a fraud on the chances of it are minimal because we've got the other automatic counters available for us to check again as well. And if there's any fraud which takes place, the operator is responsible for paying because it was an independent account. If we say 10 vehicles have gone through and if he just wants to pay out for 8, we can't. He's got to pay out for 10 vehicles. So that's what we've got over there. And also where does the money go to? The money, as you rightly pointed out, member, honorable member, is that it does go to the maintenance and upkeep of the road, including the repayment of the loan. And like everybody else, you know, we pay interest on the loans that we have taken out. Then as far as who inspects the roads in there, I'm not exactly too familiar with exactly how it used to happen in the past, but what we've done on the National Road Network here is that we have every millimeter of the road now covered by what we call routine road maintenance contractors. And it is the routine road maintenance contractors who are meant to be monitoring the quality of the road for us on a visual basis. We do have another system which will come to. As well as to how we monitor the road. So that is what happens. And then as far as the overloading is concerned, if you recall in my presentation, I spoke about the new facilities and I spoke about the traffic control center. The traffic control centers serve two purposes. One is for us to weigh the vehicle. And the way that we identify a potentially overloaded vehicle is we see in the road, you'll see that we've got pegs. And these are weighing vehicle, weighing motion vehicle pairs. So what they do, they basically like a scale. But that is not good enough for prostitution purposes. That just gives us an indication that there's a potentially overloaded vehicle. This vehicle then will be pulled off the road by the traffic officers, and this is where again we rely on the enforcement. Once the vehicle gets pulled off the road before going to the center, where it will be weighed on a static scale. And if you do have some time, you know, there's two things I'd like to show these members over here. That traffic control center is how it works and how, again, we minimize fraud taking place over there. So there's no opportunity to turn around and say, you're overloaded by one time, you pay a fee and you move on. It's all automated with cameras, with computers and everything. So once the vehicle comes in and goes into the scale, you weigh it, finish, end of the fraud. But then we tend to sort of lose the battle a little bit, because that's when the justice system has to come in and go forth to check up, and it takes a long time. And some of these unscrupulous guys, what they do, they accumulate the fines. And they go to a court and they plead poverty. The magistrate briefly feels sorry for them, and they reduce the fines. And the back brings the place. I don't mean to laugh here, but that's the reality. You need a sense of humor in the job. So what we've also added to the traffic control centers now is that, well, in the past, you see, you pay the fee and you moved on. We don't do that anymore. But what we've also included in the traffic control centers is that they do a roadworthy check on the vehicle, where we put in the equipment to check your brakes. Yeah? Then they'll check the lights, etc. They will do a minimal roadworthy check on the truck, and that at least the thing is not roadworthy, you know, there's an appropriate action. But again, we rely heavily on the traffic officers to do that. and we've entered into partnership with our provinces, etc. Technically, we as a national agency are not meant to provide the centers, the provinces are meant to do that. But we understand the budgetary constraints. We also understand that we need to do this. And very importantly, to recognize and realize is that when we put up the center, we don't just look at it in terms of protecting the national roads. We see that where we've located, we've looked after a network of roads. Because it doesn't help these guys avoid one road where the center is and they're going to use another road and cause the damage. Take the center. So these pads that I'm talking about will be around, you see, and then we'll monitor it and pull them off and bring them to the center. So it's based on the network in in consultation and identified with the provinces. I don't know if you know the M1, you've got Matole, for instance, over the M4, we've got Doncaster. So if you go on the tape on the M1, on the other hand, the way in motion thing. Way in motion.
On the road.
Yeah, on the road, you'll see the bed which are installed in the road. Yeah, and you go over this, and this will give us an indication at the center, because that truck looks potentially overloaded, traffic officer waits up in there. Some of this later, we've got an alarm goes up. The most sophisticated one that we've done is now at the Diamond Hill Plaza on the N4, where we're going to Bidbank and then by Broncos Place, right? We've got the weighing motion phase over there, the thing comes there, and then we'll check the vehicle, like a tractor system. And if the vehicle stops for more than 5 minutes or interferes with this thing, right? If we don't escort the vehicle, it's monitored on the screen if it's coming or not, so it's coming to the center. If you fiddle with this thing, alarm goes off and then we send the traffic officer to the point for them. This is, you know, I think it's an unfortunate and unnecessary issue for cops, but that's how we protect our assets. So we've got these traffic control centers. And as I said, our agreement and understanding with our provinces is that we will provide the traffic control centers and all the equipment and we will maintain it. But the provinces will have to do the law enforcement because, again, as I said, we don't have the competency as far as that is concerned. Now, there were a couple of questions that further are also related to the toll roads in that, and one of them was relating to the concessions. First thing I want to note to the House is that none of the roads are private. The servitude that you call this belongs to the state. That is not. What we have done is that entered into a concession contract for a period of 30 years. The concessionaire is responsible for the upgrading, for the maintenance of the road, etc. We have a monitoring system in place to do that. We have various conditions that he has to comply with, which get regularly checked, etc. As to what condition the state of the road should be in, we've taken certain guarantees from this guy. If there's a non-performance, it's basically performance-based, right? And at the end of the concession period, the road, the improved road, and included in there what we've got written, is that in what state, in what condition the road should be handed over to us. And basically what we said, that other than doing your routine road maintenance, meaning to say pulling potholes or cutting the grass and keeping the drains clean, etc., and so forth, we should not be able to do what we call major maintenance for a period of 5 years thereafter. So it comes back to the state free of charge. So, but the land on which the road is never sold or given away, so that still belongs to us. It doesn't go to the state. In that sense, the road itself is not privatized. What is privatized is the operation of the thing. That's all that is privatized. Yeah? And how do we end up with declaring a road as a toll road, etc.? First of all, the National Roads Agency will do only the feasibility study. We will conduct the feasibility studies, etc. If the road proves to be feasible, etc., a proposal will be made to the minister. And it is our minister then at the end of the day, as part of government policy, which decides whether to have it or not. The National Roads Agency does not do it. I know that the impression I gave you. And the process for that, if you see 2 weeks ago, if you read the press as I was saying, where we have informed everybody to say this is our intention to declare, you know, this road as a toll road, right? and the public has an opportunity to come back to us and give us comments. And that is the second stage, the second opportunity, I should say. When we're doing the environmental impact assessment, we go through a very comprehensive public participation process, where they have an opportunity then, and then this is the second opportunity then. We also have to formally write to all the municipalities through which the road goes, including the premiers of the province. Formally write to them, and we have to get a response from them, say whether they support or partially support or don't support it all or anything. So there's a rigorous legislative process that one has to follow before one declares a road as a toll road. Now, in terms of what you said, the one of the three states, the only road that we've got concession is the N3 between Johannesburg and Pietermaritzburg up to Tsigaro. The Maryhill one is still a toll road, but it's owned and operated on behalf of the agency by somebody else, but it's owned by the National Road Agency, so the N3. Then you've got the Platinum Highway, which the resident is very familiar with, going through this province, the N4. And then, of course, the N4 going east, that's the one going west, to the, what we call the Maputo Development Corridor. Those are the only three concession roads there. Now, if the man from Beverly has been taking those legs, then I would love to have his name to see how much money we can get back from them, if that's what you say. Now, the N1 is also a toll road from Grasmere going past Bloemfontein, which will get a plane there. But it is owned by the National Road Agency, funded by us, but operates, I'm not sure who operates it, either in the toll or toll with the operating funded system. So, but any repair work, etc., that would have been done on that would have been gone out by the changes would have been left by the agency on that one over there. Yeah. Next, what is an acceptable period for a pothole? Now, on the routine road maintenance, as I said earlier on, 80% of the work must be done by SMMD, 90% of it must be done by black contractors. What we've done in terms of the performance, we've identified or not identified, defined a pothole of a particular size, and we said that pothole of that particular size shouldn't be there for more than 24 hours. Okay? Then a certain size of pothole can be a bit called a longer. Now what happens? What is the maintenance? You see a pothole, you phone me. Alright? Phone me and look at it because our routine road maintenance inspector hasn't necessarily gone over that portion of the road in that particular day or in those 2 days. So he or she hasn't picked this up, so we rely heavily on the public to inform us. And we appreciate the public. You see a pothole, please call. As long as it's on our phone. Please do not hesitate to call. You'll see on the board where we've got routine road maintenance, there's a number. Please check this, if it doesn't work, call me and tell me. Then the guy's not doing his job. That's the whole idea. We put that number over there so we report the pothole. Then you're going to mobilize the contractor to come in and say. Yeah. And if the contractor doesn't come in within a reasonable time, we apply a penalty. The National Road Agency. We will apply a penalty to them. So that is the performance agreement that we've got. Now, I know that is a theory of it. It doesn't always work in practice, but I think generally it does. On the National Road Network. Now, sure.
Before I turn on, I have to visit the photo.
No, no, you can hold us and just tell us in the photo. Just inform us, you know, this time. Just inform us. We'll appreciate that. Then the issue around proclaimed National Road. Now, there's always a confusion, Chair, that people believe that every end demarcated at the end, every end road is a national road. Again, there's a registration process in terms of what constitutes the national road. What we've got, or what is changing now, because we're incorporating a lot of these roads into the national, proclaimed national road. So the term we should talk about the proclaimed national road. We have what we call route numbers. The route numbers are the R, and the R and the P, which is the provincial ones, are generally the same. And then we've got in what we've identified as national routes. Now, the national routes are owned, basically, or were used to be owned in the main by the provinces, but with the incorporation of it coming to the national roads, there's again a legislative process where we get a letter from the premier requesting that this road be declared a national road, proclaimed as a national road. Then that has to be gazetted, and that is done again by our minister, by the Minister of Transport. And there is a confusion. Now, how do we mark this over there? Usually, you'll see there's a little blue board on the side of the road, and she put the N2-North section 21 west. Right, and that's what it says. The 92 is the national road. It's going in the westerly direction, and we've carved these things up into sections for maintenance purposes, and that was the section 21. The provincial road should have the same blue marker, but with the P represented. And that is how you demarcate them. The municipal roads are within the municipal boundaries, like in Cape Town, the section. So, and each one of them, each field government is responsible for maintaining its road as marked. Okay. But all of this is connected, you see. Now, I understand the public doesn't have the time or wants it to go through it, but if somebody turns around and says, where is it? We'd be able to give it that, even way back from 1930, they say that is a national road, or it's not a national road, it's a provincial road, or under whose jurisdiction they are called. So that is the issue as far as the national road is concerned. Now, see, I'm going down the list that I've got over here. And then the budget in the 9 provinces. Now, I said one of the two things I'd love to show them now is how do we do the monitoring and how do we do other things. And I'm quite happy to come back to the task and kind of do a presentation. I think it's a very, very interesting presentation for people to see how do we do it. Basically, what do? We monitor the roads and we've got some very sophisticated people. And I'm not taking a break here. To the extent that even the California Highways Authority wants to buy our pavement management system from us. So we have a monitoring system, and unfortunately, our provinces don't have it. I'm very sorry to say, don't have it. We do have it. So we monitor roads, they're sophisticated vehicles, we drive along there, we measure a whole lot of things. That's why we can tell you what the rough exposure was, what the texture is. Now we do a network measurement of this thing on a 3-year basis, but on a project basis we'll do it on an annual basis before we go on to the project. Through that system we will then turn around and look at what the worst condition of the road is, and those roads which I said were good. Our challenge is to say the roads which are good, we will always want to maintain them in a good condition. We can't allow them to deteriorate because of that 1-6-18 factor. Yeah? And that is how we do it, and that's how we will allocate the roads to say that this is the road we require. So it's not done on a provincial basis, it's done on what is needed on the road. That brings me to the N12. And here, with respect, the problem with the N12 is that, and I can show you and I can give you the date. The block is here in the Department of Mineral and Energy. Yes, let me explain to you. Just answer it. Before we do a road, the first thing we need to do is do an environmental impact assessment. Alright? That unfortunately takes longer than it should, simply because we have colleagues who just don't make a decision. Now, our argument with the Department of Environmental Affairs has been to say that if we are doing a repair work within the existing road reserve, there must be a minimal amount of impact assessment we must do. If it's not a new road, we're not going to a greenfield site. I think that they're starting to change, but it's taken us now, what, 6 years before we convinced them. And they still haven't changed the regulations for us to expedite. Alright? So that's the one area. The second area that we have to do, as you know, we open up boroughs to mine material for the use of the road. Please understand, this is for using of the road. We have to do a separate environmental assessment. But this time we have to go to the Department of Mineral and Energy Affairs. And they have to give us a mining permit. And these guys are the impression to be mining for precious materials. Ah, it's not.
You have a sense of humor in this job.
So, I can show you on the end job. Then we had one little thing wrong. Because we needed to make the application in Barco. Yeah? And we put in the application to Barco. Because we thought that's the regional office. Even a central place for you. So you gotta identify which is the regional office for that, you know, particular area. Alright? And the guy sent it back to me. He couldn't even have the decency to say your sister organization will fix it, and I'll send you the book. Then what these guys want from us. Now, in our contract, we make allowances for the rehabilitation of the borrowers. Alright? So we pay for the borrowers, because, you know, we pay for this stuff. we make allowances. That is not good enough for them. They want guarantees from us. We got fed up with this thing and we have issued the guarantee. But if somebody checks it very carefully, and I said it very open, it's contradictory to the PFMA. Now we set up a meeting with the Treasury and the Department of Minerals and GFA yesterday, for yesterday afternoon. In the morning we get the email from them, sorry we can't make the meeting. I'm not talking about any trouble and suffering, I can show you a list of problems. That's why they are delayed. Now I know N12 is highly embarrassing. So yes, we keep on fixing the potholes, you know, to try and keep it in the same condition. It's a waste of money. That is the challenge of the process. So any assistance from this part will be very welcome for us to expedite that. It really, really would be welcome. We tried to enter into a memorandum of understanding with them on the issues about the stoppage and the guarantee. That was a meeting for that. We can't even get a meeting or we'd like to turn up at a meeting. And of course we've been accused of everything, bad planning, bad place, this and all of that. Meet at the end of our fellowship.
Maybe just as a follow-up. The last time we had a certain presentation by the teacher, she spoke of a cluster of teachers. At that level, to what extent has that been able to be affected?
Yeah, unfortunately, it hasn't been well addressed. It has been raised at that point. It has been raised there. The issue around the guarantees, for instance, it's costing us money to provide those guarantees. You know, it's the cost of raising these guarantees. So, here with respect, and that is why I can only apologize to the House that we haven't met. We've actually awarded the contract on the N12. We've got a contractor waiting to start work, but he can't. In fact, it's costing us money because of the escalation. And that is the story on the N12 with respect to the N12 case. Then, as I said, in terms of who maintains the roads, I think I've covered that, because each jurisdiction or each sphere of government maintains its own roads. There is no district road agency, so I'm not sure where you saw that. There's only three road agencies in South Africa. One is the Johannesburg Road Agency, which only looks after the metropolitan roads of Johannesburg. Then we have the Limpopo Roads Agency, which we are trying to change because there's a strict responsibility, because there is a responsibility with the Department of Public Works for roads as well, and I don't like that. There's a strict responsibility. There should be one entity responsible. And of course, there's a National Roads Agency. There's no District Roads Agency. Yeah. So I'm not sure if it's all yet. Then the integrated planning, I think that's a major challenge that we face. So before I come back to you, let me tell you one other thing. You know, we're trying to do now through the presidency because of the impetus of Gita, where they want to say that what we need to do is identify the strategic roads. Now you tell me now, do I choose the N11 where I have the same complaint from Mpumalanga, or do we choose the N12 as a strategic road? For us, both those roads are strategic. And for us, both those departments that I mentioned are the blockage. They are the binding constraints we're facing. And these things are costing us money. And that's where we need to do something to streamline at least this intergovernmental cooperation so that we can sort these things out. In a similar vein, as far as the integrated planning is concerned, Chair, there's not enough of it. I think it does happen at the cluster, the DC cluster, etc. So maybe we need to strengthen that. We need to strengthen that. Because we don't have, you know, the issue around housing, etc. And I think you all know the efforts we're making in terms of densification, mixed type of development as far as housing is concerned, and not just looking after, for instance, you know, one area and other areas. Chair, the last question I got on my list is the issue around the lot. I'm going to ask the CFO to explain that. She understands the county better than I do.
No, I don't want to go into an accounting explanation, but if you look at our annual report, main on page 108, there's an explanation on the going concern, which also covers that off the explanation, but I'll rather explain it from a different side. If you look at our two different businesses, the sole and the non-sole side, on the poll side, we've seen these show you the finance charges that you pay every year. Obviously, if you construct the toll road, you're not receiving any income until you've built the road has been completed in construction. Only then do you receive the income through the toll gate. So obviously, for that period, you are paying finance charges, the expenses, you're carrying all of that until the time comes that you receive the full income. And there is also indicators that we look at the feasibility of each toll road over a 50-year period or the life of the toll road. So for the first 15 years almost, it will be a negative, a loss period, until that road is then, you've covered the initial load, and then you would only move into that period where you have road to be retained, or have repaid its debt and making a profit. On the other side, you've got the non-toll road. Our law says that we can only spend what we receive on non-toll roads. I'm not allowed to borrow or even have an overdraft. So I can only spend the cash that I receive every year from the National Treasury. However, in accounting theory, if you can call it that, I have to, what they call, defer the income that I receive that I've spent on assets. So if I spend on a rehab, which is identified as an asset, I've spent 60 million rand this year, I have to defer that 60 million over the life of that asset, which then creates a loss in my income statement because I cannot show that as an income in the year that I've actually spent. Okay, so that's, I don't want to get into that massive accounting explanation, but I've got an explanation there in, on page 108 in going concern explanation. 108. 108. It's part of the director's report. There it says going concern. You'll see that under the first bullet, there I discussed the whole deferred income thing, which is an accounting statement that currently says that you have to defer the income for government grants of assets that you've generated for God. We've got a drive this year trying to see if we can influence the International Accounting Standards Board. Because for federal, it's not a liability. I'm never going to repay that money that I've received from Treasury, which I've already spent. The only way I can do that is getting back the road. So it's a bit of an accounting nightmare at the moment, and which makes the very difficult thing that deferred income increases every year. The more we spend on CapEx, the bigger that deferred income becomes, and it shows as a liability on my part.
Not
just
the other box in terms of we've lost money.
And it's also not a liability because I'm never going to be paid. It's a book loss, yeah. So that's what I'm saying. It's an accounting statement, IS Tax 118, that says you have to defer the income you've spent on assets. Yeah. So it's not a, that's what I'm saying, the cash flow. If you look at a cash flow, which you will see in the segment report right today, I cannot spend more than I receive. And I haven't. So as long as I keep that fine, then I'm done. Which is on the toll road, it's not, but the more difficult to use is over the life of the asset, which is 50 years. And we do that every 6 months. We check whether this toll road is still able to repay it. But every 6 months we check whether the toll road is still viable.
I think the question
here
is
okay, say let me, I thought that I covered it, but that's fine. Basically what happens is we'll look in our concession contract, we have a question in, for instance, as to what we call the social responsibility of the concessionaire, and that is where we promote the SMMEs. You'll find in all the concessionaires, the local community works with the contractors, etc. But there's also, I mean, one of the projects we promote the very support, as you said, the concession supports a large age program, etc. We've got entrepreneurial development, suffered some losses, some successes, it's going to be expected. So that's the kind of stuff that we do.
Well, that's fine. I think you made a commitment in relation to aspect that has got to do with
how we do the budget reallocation.
Yes, budget reallocation. Linked to that, because in your presentation you just brought up, the confusion of the principles of the structure in your road management. So, it would be good that even when you speak to the confusion of road principles of the structure, to reflect on the problems that you have successfully, through the Equality Practice Program, being able to graduate people from ordinary laborers to skilled people who are able to stand up their own jobs. Because through that implementation, then the committee then gets an understanding of how the institution itself or the agency has a buy-in to the developmental agenda of the country and what then becomes that contribution. Because if it's just a broad statement that says we're contributing to the development of SMMEs and blah, 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 but we are unable to say as a committee we would want to go into oversight and see how these things are working. Where are they? Where are they located in the country? So I think the general view is that certain reports should be able to reflect and stick to those kind of things in order for us to have a better understanding of what is the agency in an actual factory. Because, you know, interestingly, if you try to kill it, I think it's just after your first town off to the R road there's a road maintenance problem. And I happened to stop and ask who's the contractor? No, the contractor is connected. So what is your role? No, we are just not now yet. And that's exactly what they're doing. There's no ethical routine, nothing at all. They're just pushing those machineries and then on another flat and also slow down and that's it. And you then ask yourself, but after this project, what is that program? Is it a provincial program? No, it's not a provincial program. Who's responsible for this program? Yes, members of a national. Well, and they would not know it. And they are just ordinary people. One that they know it, but the act is doing. And I must say, now it's all of crazy, because if I see something on the road, I said, I ask. Like the one that you just said, I passed about two of them. And should I pass there saying that people, because the next, I'm going to stop and see how the people are going to do it. But I don't know if members do still have that follow-up questions or comments.
Actually, my comment is when the presenter says other departments are stalling progress, they are standing in the way, blocking for the growth to be done. And he made mention of the EIA project. For an existing road that is dilapidating, that the Environmental Affairs and Tourism wants again EIA to apply, you know, that maybe we convene both departments to this meeting because it's one committee. That we hear, I think we will be doing our EIA. So just that's why we go. So that we try to separate up.
No, that's fine. I think that's one option, because immediately what came to mind as the Mazin was making that comment was the extent to which maybe we can only two questions. When it's comments that he made to how the department saw
see that as a very important instrument of economic development in our country. But those are options that I think among us can look at. Which one works out to exercise what do you have a comment?
The first one is that your influence also on the budgetary allocation. What has happened is that the national treasury allocated the budget structure. We start with lower amounts in 2007 and 8 years and get to the out year between 19 and 30 budget. But the problem with Sanghar is that you need the allocations earlier, like 2007, 8, 8, 9, to deliver 19. So actually there's a reversal of your allocation. You get the higher amount in the outer year and the lower amount in the current. So the cash flow problem with these projects, you have to allocate according to each allocation.
It impacts negative now in terms of your credit and objectives.
Second thing, we quite have to care to come and do a presentation as to how we do that. How do we find the and what we take into account in the maintaining of the roads. I have done that presentation to a number of provinces, by the way, just to inform the House Chair. We do intake with the MEC and with the Cabinet in our provinces. We will go and do presentations to show them what we're doing in the province, etc. And if we can assist where we can, we do do that. But it's usually an invitation from the province. We all think
I don't know about the chapter of the proposal project at all or not, but my knowledge that they don't seem to have this high staff turnover. That's just my personal knowledge, but I don't know what the reason for. And I think the House needs to understand very clearly. I think the road, to my own mind, that the local road agency does a very, very good job. I want to say this categorically. But what I don't like personally is the split responsibility. The local roads agency is responsible for X number of kilometers of roads, and the Department of Public Works and Roads is responsible for another Y kilometers of roads. And I'm saying that the split responsibility
could corrupt the province. When they set up the road, they, you know, they need archers, they need consultants. Now we advise against that. We want one single entity to be responsible for all the roads. Now we turn around and we go to public meetings, for instance, with our colleagues from the Limpopo province. And then sometimes we go to the agency guys. And the community asks and says, no, it's not our responsibility, it's the partner's responsibility. You can't do that to the public. You can't do that. You're either responsible or you're not responsible. And the public gets extremely frustrated with it, including council. So you can't get no answers for it. You're passing the buck off. That's how we think. And that's my take on that. And that's what I'm saying. I speak my mind pretty openly and I told the NPC, it's wrong with us to do that. Merge to it might be one entity. So just for clarification.
No, I
hope
that was for the best performance available. We will go and see what they're doing. When the CEO of Sanga confirmed that
university.
No, thank you very much, and obviously we will accept that
to make follow-up.